A63. Number 3A.
We have seen that the third day first gives that symbol of the dry land. Now, this dry land, the third day, is an interesting development because it doesn't say directly that God created the dry land. You would expect that, just as it says in the first day, and God said, let there be light. Well, in the third day, we don't have that, that God said, let there be dry land. They indicate how that dry land comes into existence. Namely, what does it say in the third day? How that dry land comes into existence. You see, he said, let the waters be gathered together. Now the waters are the waters of the second day. And said, let those waters be gathered together unto one place. And then you have the interesting point that the record doesn't say, and when it is gathered together at one place, then you have the sea. But then he said, then you get the earth. You would expect that he would say, then you have a sea, or an ocean. But he said, no. Then the dry land appears. Now, what does that mean in the metaphysical implication? What does it mean for our everyday experience? Again, we have to ask, what does it mean in being? Not just as a concept, a nice story, and we can somehow visualize and conceptualize about it and say, yes, I can see that concept. Oh, yes, God gathered together the waters and then the dry land appears. But what does it mean in our everyday life?
It brings about a clear focus, a definite focus. Things are put into an understandable form.
You put them into an understandable form.
Are you asking me to put them in an understandable
form? Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, are you...
Oh, am I doing it?
No. Does it say that you are... Does the symbol mean that we put them into an understandable form? Or what is it?
Well,
the dry land is an understandable form. I quite agree that they are forms of mind.
It says let the waters be gathered together. It's a process that we go through because...
What is that process in practical life? What does it mean in practical life? We don't have waters in practical life. We don't go to the... to the tap and let the water run. What do we do? You see, I want to know, what do we do in practical life?
Well, it involves the first 2 days in contemplating ideas and bringing out the definition of the ideas in our contemplation, in practical life, in practice.
Yeah.
So that we have something we can get a hold of.
That's just a rendering. That's just a rendering which I ask you, so that we have something to get hold of. Is that what the text says? Doesn't it say, the text says, and the dry land appeared? Isn't it the passive form? Not an active form? Huh? See, that's the point. I think what you experience, that's where we can go right wrong, where we can... put our human sense of creativity into action instead of letting it happen. You see, the point is, you see, that what it says is that if we, what Bill nicely called it, when if we contemplate, if we bear in mind, if we gather together, you go right back to the waters, to your elements of mind. They are not, elements of mind are not yet forms of mind. You go back to the ideas of mind. You gather those ideas of mind. What does mean gathering? You are turning them around in your consciousness. You ask those questions. What do they mean? What they are here for? What is their purpose? What are they really? You begin to gather your waters constantly. You begin to contemplate, to love these ideas which you have in mind. And in this way you gather, in biblical symbol, you concentrate, you focus on ideas, and then the dry land appears. It is a passive action. Something happens. You are not going to have to make something happen. See, that's the point. You are not going to make something happen. You are not going to say, now I'm going to define it. I'm going to make it definite. Huh? Something within your consciousness, within your spiritual consciousness, begins to crystallize. You don't know how, you don't know when, you don't know through which channel. It happens. And that's where you have to turn, you see, from the objective approach that it becomes subjective. We don't make it subjective. It is made subjective to us. If we go through the order of mind and spirit and contemplate and ponder that gathering together is a symbol of always thinking about these ideas, focusing or putting these ideas into our focal consciousness. We focus on it. We value them, we nurture them, we love them, we hug them, we admire them, we worship them. There are the gathering together of the waters. And then the dry land appears. Suddenly something makes click, or something becomes definite in us. We are not going to make something definite. It makes itself definite in us. That's the touch of spiritual sense that we feel then, that the spiritual evidence shows itself forth. That's the mystery, so to say, of the laws of creativity, the miracle of the law of creativity, that it is still soul that defines itself to us. We are not going to define soul. We are not going to define a solution. It comes to us. It defines itself to us. But it doesn't define itself to us just by wishing that God would help us. See, it takes that sense away of that our approach is a religious prayer. But our approach is that we say, I don't know the answer. I don't know the way I should go. I don't know what is my next step. I haven't the faintest idea. So God knows it. So in a religious prayer, I go to God and say, well, dear God Almighty, you know it, and you lead me, and you do the trick, and I trust you. That's a religious approach. In the creative approach, we say, oh, I first go to mind, and I know that mind knows it. But what does mind know? It knows its own ideas. And so I fill my consciousness with that light of mind's own ideas. And as I fill my consciousness, I go to the second day and see these only the contemplation of these ideas, not being distracted and by the problem, not being not constantly not constantly vacillate between arguing with the problem and looking at the problem and then again somehow looking at the idea and then contemplating the idea and then again arguing with the problem, but making that very big decision of just contemplating the idea, sticking to those ideas. This is the decision that I make, and that is gathering the waters. And as I do that, I don't know how long I have to do that, something begins to move within me. That's so, the third day. That suddenly, step by step, something becomes definite either in my consciousness or something happens in my life that is a definite move which leads perhaps through many other steps to the right solution. So this beginning of the third day is a terrific day. It really asks us to not to interfere with human conceptions, to have the terrific courage to trust a spiritual law without interfering with our intelligence, with our human intelligence, without interfering with our outlining of a solution. So that's the dry land appears. I like to think of that as in the passive form, you see, it appears to us. But we can see the prerequisites, namely, to gather the waters together. That wonderful sense of focusing, worshipping the ideas of mind. That's mind-spirit. And that mind-spirit has within itself, see, that's what we have to see, that the divine law of creativity always works from God and has the creative ability within God and not within our intelligence, with our conception, so that it's not just a conceptual sense that we have to be aware of. It is not a humanly intelligent creative law, but it's something that is innate in the divine nature. Being itself has within itself a law of creativity. And we just have to adapt ourselves to that, and then it begins to manifest itself. So suddenly something happens. The dry land appears. It may not appear in its fullness. It may appear first in a slight touch, and slowly it gathers and gathers and gathers more and more definiteness. Yes. So that's the dry land. Then we saw that there is another symbol in that third day, namely that God said, let that dry land bring forth something, which has the seed within itself. And so it seems as if it would be a further step, but actually it is not quite another step. Now, what does it mean, metaphysically, the seed within itself? What does it indicate?
Self-propagation.
Self-propagation, yes.
Continuity
of what? Of?
Idea.
Is it idea?
Identity.
Of identity.
Identity,
yes. It's the continuity of identity. That the identity has a continuity, it reappears, it reproduces itself, so that the identity is unchangeable. It brings out the ever reproduction of an unchangeable identity, so that we feel here suddenly that the first symbol must be complemented with something else. The first symbol, the dry land appears, and said, oh fine, the dry land appears. Will it disappear again when the waters come again? If the waters have gathered together at the dry land appear, couldn't the floods come back? And the dry land again disappears. And so somehow they had to bring out, no, that dry land remains dry land, and has within itself the power of infinite reproduction in order to keep the identity intact, to eternalize the identities. And we'll see that when we take the subtones, that they have to take in at least the subtone of life, a fifth subtone, in order to show that identity is only then identity when it is eternal, or it isn't identity. The moment that identity could change, disappear, it wouldn't be identity. Yes. Therefore, what does it mean in practical experience? Now, I always come back to practical life experience. What does that second symbol tell us? You know, we have a life, we have a terrific, we have a life before us, a genesis before us. So these days are not biblical days. They are being. What do you feel that, what that means in practical life? What do we gain if we know that? Has it any use for us, or do we just have a philosophy about the 7 days of creation? We have to ask that. Is our study just a philosophy? See? Or is it being? If it is being, we must constantly see that we are that. So we must constantly see what it implies for our life, or it isn't of no value. And what is the value of it?
We can depend on it.
For instance, so that, say, if that idea begins to identify itself and something comes forth and says, that's the answer, well, that's it, and it becomes spiritual evidence, and you feel now it's going to break that darkness. It's no more flimsy. It's no more waters, and you don't know really water. You cannot form waters. You can have no identity as water. It always runs through your fingers, so to say. It's fluid. You never have a clear identity. And if something suddenly begins within us to gather definiteness, be it through spiritual evidence, be it through a clarity of spiritual sense, the second symbol says, you can rely on that because that is eternal. It is an identity that will never lose its identity. It will never disappear again. So you haven't found something that you feel can rely on it always, or will it just fiddle away again? Can you say fiddle away? Yeah. Can it... Peter out, Can it peter out again? No, it has within itself the ability to reproduce itself or to uphold its identity. It will never vanish again. Isn't that terrific? See? That you really feel, well, you know, when it is a life story, this isn't so simple. It is a life story, and an idea comes to you and tells you something very big that implies that has its implication on your life. That may have its your implication in your life, that it says give up your job. That it may have its implication of your life, give up your friends who are not friends, and things like that. Yeah. This is not just playing around with terms. There you must have that you must see that has a seed within itself, that it will be something that will bless you beyond words, because it will stand for eternity, and all the rest never stands for eternity. That it is something that really brings you further, and therefore you never lose anything by trusting it. You never lose anything spiritually, divinely, by trusting it. You may lose a hell of a lot, which is temporal. But we need that sense of that seed within itself, or we are insecure. We would be insecure. We would say, well, that's taking quite a bit of a chance. That's really risky, this thing. Because I don't know if it always will be that way. But here the law says it will stay with you. It will be your being and will never be taken away from you again. So we come to the fourth day of creation. What is the symbol of the fourth day? The universe? Is it the universe?
It's more definite than that. It's the sun and the moon and the stars.
All right. It's more the stellar universe, the cosmos. You have there the sun, the greater light, the lesser light, the sun, the moon, the earth, the stars, huh? Yes. What does that symbol mean in metaphysical terms? System. What else could it also mean?
Government.
Yes. What could it also mean?
Structure.
Yes. What could it also mean?
Relationship.
What could it also mean?
Harmonious operation.
You have quite a few. You had, I don't know anymore, system, You had government, you have harmony, you have harmonious operation. They all link, relationship, They are all linked together, as we know from our study of the seventh synonymous term, the intra-relationship, you see? You see how important it is that we see that exercise of B2, the intra-relationship of ideas within a synonymous term. So this whole symbolism gives us a sense that which we really get, or which practically everybody gets, when at night we look up to the stars, and we see the stars, and I think everybody gets the feeling, oh, this is a terrific, harmonious government up there. We don't see how the stars pump into each other and so on. And so humanly, that stellar universe gives us a symbol for system, harmony, government, lawful relationship. We know that we can calculate, so to say, the place of every star and how they move. They are exact, gives us a terrific sense of really the harmonious activity in the stellar universe. That's how, certainly at the time when the biblical writers were writing it, that it gave them that impression. Perhaps the modern astronomers would no more feel that way. They know that these stars explode and that they bump into each other and I don't know what. But still, that is not the case. The case is they had to find somewhere a symbol that would symbolize harmonious relationships. And they found it there. They couldn't easily find it, say, with the government in Egypt or in Babylon. They wouldn't find that that was harmonious relationship. So they took that. What does that... Oh yeah, metaphysically we said what it means. Why on earth do we need this fourth day? Why are we not happy with the third day? Where we have seen that every identity is eternal. What do you want more? What do we want more than to have a sense that our identity is eternal? Wouldn't that be wonderful just to stop there? I feel now I have found my ever-reappearing, my ever-new identity. Why is it necessary to have a further step? See, these are the questions we ask always.
There is an identity with that oneness of principle, that oneness of the harmonious government, that oneness of the operation of the system that comes from the third day into the fourth.
Yes.
Is it the universality?
It's universality. But do we need that really? Do we need that universality if I feel I'm an identity of being and I'm lost in forever. Is that not enough? Yes, see?
Well, the idea has a mission that it's learned in soul, but now it has to have a place in the system and it has to have a relationship with other ideas. Otherwise, it's of no value.
So, what Eleanor said, you see, every idea per se is an isolated idea, and we gather, so to say, a bigger capacity, a bigger meaning, if you are put back into a bigger realm. Therefore, that we are related to something bigger, so that we are operating in something bigger than just in our ego, just as an isolated idea. We are operating in a universe, therefore we are an idea of something much bigger, and that's the whole universe. And so we need that fourth day in order that we see now that every identity of being is not an isolated idea, but that it fulfills a much bigger purpose, gathers, so to say, a much greater importance when it is seen as part of a whole, of a bigger whole. And so that fourth day would show, yes, that stellar universe shows that all those millions and millions of stars are actually not isolated stars, but they form a whole universe, a cosmos, a universe of ideas, and therefore each idea is only then finding really its bigness when it is operating in a whole. What is the practical implication for our life about this point?
That it works harmonious. It's like the gears of a machine. There's no friction. Each part works perfectly because they're fitted, because they fit correctly.
Yes, they fit correctly. But I have asked, what does it mean for your life? What does it mean for your life? When you should not stop at the three, but go further to the four. What does it mean for your life?
We can put those ideas into operation.
We could put those ideas in operation. Yes?
Those ideas are in operation.
They are in operation?
It's an impersonal principle that's operating.
It's an impersonal principle operating. But I still ask, what does it mean for you? You still tell me something about the principle of being.
It means that I'm not an isolated idea, but that I am part of a related whole.
Yeah. You see, that's the point. That's the point where many people hold. Huh? They say, I don't care anything about what happens with the universe. The main thing is that I can make a go of my own life, and that I can care perhaps for my family. And after that, well, after me the deluge, huh? I don't care, huh? What do I care about the universe? What do I care about it? The main thing, I care for myself. Therefore, the big question is, can we see that our identity is actually only then an identity when we put it into the universe, when we relate ourselves to a universe, when we give our whole being, what we are and what we do, to a universe and not to me. The egoistic, the egocentric concept is that each one looks just for himself.